A61, number 11A.
All right. Then we come to baptism. That's not nice either, huh? It's a biblical term again, but Mrs. Eddy uses it, and uses it as a symbol for what? Baptism is really purification by spirit, she says. It's a washing clean of materiality. It's a symbol, really, baptism, that we should only have one nature, and that we should be washed clean of any other nature. That's why Mrs. Eddy calls it purification by spirit, and we had it right after purity, because it's a symbol of that. And the same is about burial. So I think we can drop that too, finally, out of our list, because it's again a biblical symbol, but it's a very beautiful symbol, because burial means, to say burial, did I pronounce it rightly, means submergence in spirit. That would be our true burial, huh? To submerge completely in spirit. Then we are closed round about only with one nature, just as in the baptism, in the true baptism, where I really dip the children right into the water, right? Really like the true good baptism, not just the sprinkling of a little drop of water, so that it gives a sense that we are completely surrounded by one element, by the elements of mind. Water are elements of mind. And so again, you can see how mind and spirit work together. You have first the elements of mind as the elements. Now you submerge yourself completely into the elements of mind, which is symbolized by water in the first record of creation. So if we submerge completely, our consciousness just accepts only one nature, the nature of spirit, then we are buried in spirit. And that's actually a positive burial, just like being baptized. Yes? Okay. Well, let's see up to now. See, can you see that up to now, practically all these ideas that were presented had just one common denominator constantly? There are not two. That's a common denomination of what we have been doing up to now. There are not two. There's only one. So you separate because there is only one. You separate the two and kick the one out. Say, I only want to have one. And in order to kick it out, you have to have the strength of spirit. And in order to do that, the whole situation is leavened with the spirit, so until everything is leavened to the point where nothing opposite is anymore left. Or we had the birth that is always showing that the true idea must come forth, and in order to give birth, all opposition, all hindrance, all obstacles must be put out of the way. Then the birth is painless. See why? See, even in human experience, the birth is painless when you go with the birth. Actually, I shouldn't teach that, because I never had a baby, and I have never been involved in seeing babies to come forth, but I know much about that, that the new theory that they teach the pregnant mothers is to go with the birth, not to hold it back. That the whole, trying to hold back makes pain. To go with the birth is painless. And so they teach painless birth, just first mentally by showing them that they have to go with the development and not to hold it back. This is in the spiritual field the same thing. The birth of an idea, the pulling through of an idea, is painless in the moment we don't put up in our consciousness all kinds of buts and whys and ifs. the buts and whys and ifs, are our obstacles. They restrict the birth. They restrict the opening of the womb so that the birth can go on naturally. If we have human conception about it, human fears about it, human outlinings about it, human desires about it, human fears about it, all that gives pain to the birth of the spiritual idea. So it's quite a mastery to be a woman giving spiritual birth. This is an art which every student of Christian Science has to learn. And I will give next Sunday evening, I'll give you a two-hour talk on the scientific obstetrics, and I will go through scientific obstetrics because I feel this is so necessary that each student is a woman. Woman must give it birth. For Jesus, Christian Science, divine science was something natural. He knew it. But Mrs. Eddy says divine science for a woman born of the flesh, divine science must be a birth. How to give birth? We must know how to give birth. Or the birth either does not go on, and the baby is killed before it's born, and we have no fruits, we have no progress, or the birth goes on very painful, and we struggle, and we go through hell with it. Or if we know the rules and laws of giving birth, the birth will be painless.
The corollary of holding back on the birth is the same thing as pulling.
Same thing.
And reserve policemen and we're taught how to have babies, and one thing we're told is don't pull. You just gently what the woman is supposed to go along with it, and we're supposed to just go along with it on the other side, reverse direction, but no pulling.
No pulling.
And that can really translate into the spiritual realm of not forcing.
Absolutely. That's why we have to have patience, huh? And patience is an idea of spirit. Spirit translated, you see, to the human is patience. The order of spirit, when translated to the human, appears as patience. Because what is patience? Not to try to interfere with the natural order. Huh? That means patience. That you let things come the way they come. So you see, all these human attributes which you have, they are somehow not taken out of the blue because, from a Christian point of view, it is taught you should have patience with your brother man and so on. But we would have to ask, why is patience something positive? Huh? And it must have its root, its source, somewhere in a deep structure of being. And it has there. It is the order. The order of spirit says you can't sidestep the order. So you cannot hold back the order, nor can you push the order. The order is fixed in being. Therefore, translated into the human field, it appears as a quality of being patient. Patient does not mean to be apathetic. That's not the same. And many think to be apathetic is just to be patient. Huh? It's very easy not to do anything, and then you say, oh, well, I'm patient. So one has to be careful about these qualities and attributes. Yeah. Up to now we could see that practically everything, can you see, had always to do with that one single denominator that spirit says, I don't know two. I only know one. And everything that has to do with separating oneself of any kind of belief in dualism is the standpoint of spirit. Before I go on, just another question for to build tonality. When we look back to mind, which we did yesterday, did we get in mind any in any of those ideas any sense of this not having to? Not at all. You see, but ask you these questions, because they, by comparison, culture the identity of each synonymous term. If he now goes through spirit, and they have always seen this struggle and battle and warfare against being mixed up with the opposite, and then say, what was the tone yesterday in mind? We suddenly feel that was a completely different melody. Completely different melody. There was never a question of opposites, of separation. Can you feel it? It was all a question that there is within mind a terrific power and a terrific cause that just wants to break out with all its might and with all its power and with all its action to go forward. This is mine, huh? And then spirit comes and says, yes, but let that be the only thing. Let that be the only. There's nothing else beside it. So let that be our first and only. Do you see? Can you feel mind? We have been thinking mind. Now, can you already feel mind? Now, that feeling mind is something you can no more write down. And no more be spelled out in terms. You hear it, and you see, my word, now I see that great, great difference between mind and spirit already. We haven't finished it. Ask anyone in Christian Science, what is the difference between mind and spirit? What do you think what the answer will be?
Synonymous.
That's it. They're about the same, huh? Are they about the same? You see what comes out slowly? Good, that's fine. All right. We come to the next one, worship. Is that an idea of spirit? Did you hear my question? It is. So spirit worships. Because worship is not an idea of spirit, huh? Because spirit doesn't worship. So can you see, we have to be careful with these compendiums, huh? First, don't trust Max too much, huh? He has written them 30 years ago, and actually I have written them. I still would put in worship, but I would put it a bit more cautiously, and I would perhaps show that they are translated form of spirit. It is our attitude to spirit. It isn't our attitude to love. It's not our attitude to life. It's a typical attitude to spirit. You didn't quite get it, huh?
Yeah.
No? Betty, you didn't get it. Betty, for you, I'd say it again. I like you to have it, huh? What does... We said that each synonymous term has specific characteristics, and when they are translated to the human plane as human motions, can I say human motions, human attitudes, human standpoints and qualities and so on, let's call it as human motions, we have seen, for instance, in mind, that the intelligence of mind, the infinite conception of ideas of mind, translates it and appears in the human as what? And we have said, as the willingness to study, to investigate, the desire to know, to study, to research, to discover. All that had to do with the mental realm, with the mental researching, intelligent investigation. That was how it comes to the human. And therefore, that is necessary in order to open the human thought for the influx of the divine mind. Now, How is it in spirit? Huh? And in spirit, spirit, because spirit is a completely different aspect of the one being, it naturally translates itself also to the human plane into different human motions. Because spirit is the only and the purity and the only nature that does not know anything besides itself, that does not want to be mixed up with anything besides itself, that, so to say, demands its whole attention, translates itself to the human and says, in the human, therefore, you should only have one God before you. That's worship. That the adorable one, not the adorable two. That you should not serve both God and mammon. That we should not have Christ and Caesar. That our attitude must be the attitude of only desiring within us the one. And this is called adoration. This is called worship. Worship is a concentration to the one. That's worship. Where one's own being, whatever we have, with all our heart, with all our soul, are directed just to the one and only, to our ideal of worship. So worship has to do with spirit, but it's not an idea of spirit. Why is it not an idea of spirit? Just to repeat it again, why is it not an idea of spirit? What is an idea? Why is it not an idea of spirit?
Spirit doesn't worship.
Spirit doesn't worship. An idea is only that which comes from the synonymous term.
Right.
Yet in mind, an idea is what? The image in mind. Therefore, only that which the synonymous term has in mind is an idea. So only that which spirit knows about itself, only that which spirit is aware of itself, is an idea. So because spirit does not worship, except we could say, but that's naturally a bit flat, we could say spirit worship itself. That we could say, but it's just playing with words a little bit. But because spirit is the only, that's the point, and demands absolute consecration of thought, energy, and desire, as Mrs. Eddy says, therefore this translates itself to the human, which says, all right, I only want to have one thing that I worship, which I serve. Therefore, worship, like what we had this morning, to put first things first, that's the same thing. To put first things first is our greatest worship. Because we put the one and only at the first place and say, this is the center, the focus of our attention. Therefore we have under worship the focus, the center, concentration, centering thought, the focal point of spirit she speaks about. She speaks about the focal distance of spirit. See, this can all be under worship. Can you see now we have a bit of a different aspect of spirit? Before we had too much that separation aspect, and now once we have separated, we can say, therefore, spirit is that which focuses everything into one. That's why she speaks about the focus of spirit, the focal distance of spirit. Spirit, not soul, not principle, not life, not truth, not love, because spirit says, I gather all into one. All the rays of light, of mind, are gathered into one. I don't let them be scattered. See, scattering is the opposite of worship. Worship means that everything is focused on the one being. Scattering the fire, your thought is all over the place. Therefore, all must be focused 2:1. Now, when we say that, let's see that this is not just an optical illustration, but that it is our life, that we have to focus everything into the focal point of spirit, which means that, again, this is the tone of spirit, that again, all our energies, our time, our attitude, our devotion, our worship, our affection, everything is always focused to the one and not to the two. To serve God alone. That's why we had in the Lord's Prayer as the second statement, adorable one, how does the Lord's Prayer and Our Father in Heaven, hallowed be thy name, hallowed be thy name, And she puts it into scientific terminology, adorable one. Well, adoration doesn't mean just to put our eyes up to heaven and have a benign attitude, but it means it really means that everything within us adores just the one. So it's life. Therefore, we can see that if spirit is that which says everything must be focused into one point, no scattering, no division, no separation, no sharing with another God, with another affection, no sharing, everything gathered into the focus, we have the reflection of spirit. We know that we only get the reflection when the focus is set clear, when the image appears at the focal point. The moment we put something outside the focal point, we have a blurred picture. We have a picture that is upside down. You remember how we tried to show that once with a nice drawing way back, with the prism and then with the lens, where all the lights of the ideas of the seven synonymous terms are gathered into the focal point, and the moment it goes outside the focal point, we get the inverted image, a blurred image, a deflection. It's no more clear. So the moment we scatter our affection, we scatter our energies all over the place to all the various gods, to all the various affections, nothing can really come out that is of the nature of progress, fruit, advancement, order. It is scattered. It is deflected. Instead of having a reflection, we get a deflection. Now, Mrs. Eddy speaks a lot about this reflection and deflection. Well, symbolism of reflection and deflection has always given rise to a lot of thinking. How is a reflection? How do I bring about a reflection? And then has always seen it somewhere outside. How is a reflection being brought about? And over there is a deflection. Actually, all that happens in our consciousness. Our consciousness is at the point of reflection or deflection. If in our consciousness everything is focused to the one, we have a complete reflection. Nothing foreign enters in. And if nothing foreign enters in, it cannot mar the picture. You say mar the picture? Yeah. It cannot adulterate the picture. The purity of the thing comes out. And we have deflection, not because there is a deflection, we have only deflection because something in us does not reflect wholly the one God. Then we have a consciousness that is deflective. And we have the effect of it. Jim?
In the spiritual principle of prayer, I might just say that we can't pray, that Spirit prays for us. And receives for us. Now, is that consistent with what we getting here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's consistent insofar as I would have to talk about it next week, because that implies already, you know, that we understand something about the levels, which brings us to the oneness of being, huh? Which then says that I can see that the Spirit, which is God, is within me and not outside. Huh? Yeah? And so it has some connection with what we are saying, that we see that Spirit, God, is not somewhere a God that is Spirit, but that our whole being is Spirit. Huh? And that therefore the only thing that really can really reflect on itself is Spirit itself within us. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have reflection. Hmm? And we can see that it is a question of our consciousness. I'm sure you have been once in one of those funny museums or so, where they have a labyrinth of mirrors that are not flat. Huh? And we look into it and we see ourselves really as funnies. Huh? Either we are tall and thin, or we are thick and broad, or we have a long face, or something like that. Huh? Are we different? No, we are not different. The reflection is not a reflection, it's a deflection. What makes it a deflection? The mirror, not we. No? The mirror. What is the mirror? Our consciousness. If our consciousness is not absolutely pure, instead of a reflection, we have a deflection.